This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
Well, it's great to have as our guest this morning, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. Craig was a former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury and former Associate Editor of the Wall Street Journal. He's author of many important articles. Take a look at his very well-read archive on LouRockwell.com. Take a look at his book, which has just come out in a new and expanded edition, The Tyranny of Good Intentions, which he co-wrote with Larry Stratton. This book shows just how far down the line towards dictatorship America has moved in the last 15 or 20 years. But Craig, I want to talk to you about American foreign policy today, which is every bit as evil, maybe even more evil than U.S. domestic policy. You've pointed out that while the U.S. government may not have a monopoly on hypocrisy, it is the most hypocritical government in the entire earth.
Yes, it's amazing, isn't it? During the whole period in which we have justified torture and have been torturing people, we've had on trial the son of the former ruler of Liberia for torturing people. And you can't find this kind of hypocrisy anywhere on earth. Recently, the Bush Attorney General, Mukasey, has said that there'll be no investigation and no prosecution of the Americans and the Bush regime who gave the go-ahead for torture, and nor will the people who carried out the acts be investigated and prosecuted. And the whole time, under American law, we have successfully prosecuted and convicted the son of Charles Taylor, who tortured his father's opponents in Liberia. So it's amazing. Our law applies to Liberia, but it doesn't apply to us. I don't think this has ever before been witnessed anywhere on earth.
Well, certainly the U.S. government thinks it ought to be running the globe. I mean, there are some people on the right who worry about the United Nations becoming the world government, but clearly the U.S. government is the world government, or rather it seeks to be the world government, and it holds itself above all other nations, and no rules apply to it that it, of course, seeks to apply to other nations.
Yes, that's right. I don't think the U.N. is a world government. The United States is much closer to it through its arrogance and through the fact that the dollar has been reserve currency, so it's easy for us to buy other governments. My dissertation chairman, three or four decades ago, while he was serving in the Pentagon, called me to his office one day, and we had a discussion, and he was quite forthright that, because I asked him, I said, how does the United States get all these governments to go along with it when it's not even in their interest? And he said, money. And I said, you mean foreign aid? And he says, no, we just give them money. We just buy them. So I think that we have essentially bought the people that are called our allies. They simply paid. And I think that's the way we exercise our hegemony. We don't seem to be all that powerful militarily, as we've learned in Afghanistan and Iraq, but we nevertheless prevail by purchasing. Even our enemies, you know, we ended up reducing the violence in Iraq by putting the Sunni insurgents on our military payroll. We just hired them to stop causing us problems. So this is the way we operate.
I remember when it came out that Manuel Noriega, who was the president of Panama and then overthrown by Bush the First in an invasion that cost the lives of thousands of Panamanian civilians, and of course no American even knows about this, but when it came out that he'd been on the U.S. payroll since his days as a military cadet, and of course the U.S. doesn't just put serving politicians and high military officials on its payroll. It seeks out those who are likely to achieve power and puts them on the payroll. So there's obviously a vast number of people, many, many thousands of the power elites of their own countries who are on the payroll from the U.S. And I also remember when in the Reagan administration, they made it illegal to name anybody on the CIA payroll. What led to that was the fact that it had been publicized that the King of Jordan had been on the CIA payroll for a very long time. Of course, you can't name people who are on the CIA payroll because that would be unpatriotic. But certainly this is a key aspect of American foreign policy. I guess it's no different from the Roman Empire or the British Empire. But I wonder how much longer this empire can last given the economic crisis.
Well, if the dollar loses its reserve currency role, it'd be harder for us to buy these people. You know, in my opinion, not just the king of Jordan, but also, of course, we bought the Egyptian ruler. But I think all of Western Europe, you can see that the British Prime Minister Blair was bought, and they pay him off afterwards, you know, when he comes out. He gets all these multi-million dollar gigs at banks that we arrange, speaking fees, directorships. And now we have this man who helped the Bush regime commit war crimes with an appointment at Yale, lecturing on religion. So there's really no end. There's really no end to the hypocrisy and the irony of it. I think that the only governments we haven't successfully purchased is the Chinese one, and the current Russian one. I think we had Yeltsin's government purchased it, but that's what Putin overturned. He threw all that out and got rid of the oligarchs that we had let take over their economy. And that's why, you know, Putin is a bad guy, because he stopped the purchase of the Russian government. It's just hard to think of what governments aren't. I mean, obviously, Chavez is not is not purchased, but so many of them are.
Well, if they won't take orders from the U.S., they're evil, right? I mean, that's the rule of thumb.
That's right. They're evil if they don't. And not only that, if you criticize the U.S., if you're an American and you criticize the U.S., what you run into, as you know, is a psychological block instantly comes up in most people that, you must be a commie. You're criticizing America. And so many Americans are like, not all of them, of course, or we wouldn't have any readers, but so many of them are like that. They cannot conceive that the United States government is not the moral light of the world, who does everything and based on goodwill to help others. They just can't conceive of it.
The U.S. government isn't the last best hope of mankind, as Richard Nixon blasphemously put it.
Yes. That's the sort of, you know, there are times when that's more believable than others. I mean, if you're in the middle of a Cold War with a military superpower and the nuclear weapons, and you can see how this can resonate to some extent, but particularly if that adversary is known for all sorts of horrors, gulags, concentration camps, police states, all that. But we now seem to be emulating all of that. The Soviet Union is gone, and now we read that we are building detention centers. Halliburton or somebody is building detention centers all over the United States. I've seen reports that the United States government now is deploying troops in the U.S. to control the domestic population. All these things, we seem to be moving in the direction of what we used to denounce. And it just kind of goes over by people. They don't see, they don't get upset, they don't say, what is this?
No, and it's true, and even though I would argue that while the Soviet Union had, I guess, the worst, most oppressive government internally ever to exist in the history of the human race, they were not as aggressive internationally as the U.S., not because their intentions were any better. They just didn't have the resources, because communism was always such a economic basket case. However, the U.S. does have the resources. It's got every dime in the pockets of every American citizen, and I guess people all over the world, that it intends to spend in bailing out its banks and bailing out its companies and extending the military empire almost indefinitely, and of course also erecting a police state here at home in a military dictatorship, and Americans call that freedom. They still believe that it's that's the definition of freedom, running the world and having the government run us.
Right. There's so many of them see it that way. We're the salt of the earth. Therefore, whatever we do is right.
Well, I'm always struck by some of the early writings of the Pilgrim Fathers, who held that the new settlement was the new Zion, that they were the God's chosen people, and therefore could kill anybody who didn't go along with them, and therefore they could just what they allegedly held to as the rules of Christian conduct didn't apply to the Indians. They could just kill them indiscriminately because they were standing in the way of this new regime on the North American continent. And it seems like that's still the view of the American government and too many Americans, that we can just kill anybody. If anybody resists us, they deserve to die. In fact, if the U.S. government kills anybody, even though they might seem to be civilians, even though they might seem to be innocent people, why, they deserve to die too, because the government killed them.
Yes, that's right. You know, just the other day I wrote that maybe we had it all wrong about these Muslims. They might not be terrorists, they might be revolutionaries. And it could be some of them have been moved to fury by the way we have treated them and all the things we've done, and all the deaths that we've brought to Iraq and Afghanistan, all the displaced people and all the rest. And a reader jumped all over me and said, you know, these people are depraved. These Muslims are depraved. We have to kill them, all of them. And I wrote back to him and said, who's depraved? We invaded them. There's over a million dead Iraqis as a consequence. There's maybe 4 million displaced. The country's in ruins, and we're doing the same thing in Afghanistan, and we overthrow their governments and put in our puppets. And why? Who is depraved?
And, of course, one of the key rules in discussing American foreign policy, at least an official rule, is you can never consider the antecedents. So we're not supposed to remember that the U.S. has been viciously involved in the Muslim world since World War II, even before that, of course, but massively since World War II, as you say, overthrowing governments, installing police states, pressing people, disappearing people, killing people. Who knows how many, not only the million in Iraq, but obviously millions more. And this has an effect. Doesn't mean two wrongs make a right, but people react to being terrorized. We think that we're the only ones who are terrorized, but of course the U.S. was terrorizing them first.
Yes, and we still are. What's so amazing to me is how long it took Muslims to get roused up by this. And I suppose they're so split internally between Sunni and Shiite that they just can't organize, as we've seen in Iraq. And I suppose that's why we can carry on this rule we have, that the weak suffer what they must, the strong do what they will. That seems to be our approach to the rest of the world, and it's why I think that we have these policies that are insistent that there can be no combination of potential opponents that could match United States military or economic power. And therefore, we have to continually work to be sure that we don't see the rise of new powers or new combinations of power, which is why I think we're trying to circle Russia with military bases. You know, we've introduced NATO now into onto the borders of Asia. And we have all these contingency plans for preventing the rise of China. And it just seems so amazing, the hubris and the arrogance, that we're going to be sure that the rest of the world stays under, if not under our control, at least unable to offer us any challenge.
I remember seeing an article, I think it was in the New York Times, by a former military official talking about how alarming it was that China sought to have a significant navy, and he was afraid might seek to be the dominant military power in the waters off China.
Right.
Whereas, of course, the U.S. has to be the dominant military power on every square inch of water any place on the globe. And other countries have no right to exist except as serfs.
That's right. That seems to be the whole attitude. And, of course, it's caused a lot of death and destruction and horrors in the world. And now I think it's isolating us. I think the world is getting sick of us, just as we may be entering a very serious economic downturn for which they don't really have any solutions, and how they're going to finance the deficit in 2009, the budget deficit, I have no idea. It's going to be somewhere between $1 and $2 trillion. The United States has never, ever had to finance a sum like that, much less when the rest of the world is faced with recovery from our toxic financial instruments and needs whatever reserves it has for its own bailout. So it's very strange to see this arrogance when there's such total dependence on foreigners to finance the daily operation of your government, to finance your wars. And yet we have that. And it's not tribute that we can impose on the Japanese and Chinese and OPEC who finance our deficits. It's something they do voluntarily, and yet we assume that they're going to do our bidding, and if they don't, that they're evil. And it's a very strange situation. It's almost mindless, that the notion that you can do whatever you want to your creditors and that they're still going to bail you out. I just wonder when it's all going to come to an end.
The other day I was reading the letters that were exchanged between Lord Acton and Robert E. Lee after the end of Mr. Lincoln's war, and Acton had written to Lee and told him how sorry he was that the South had lost. Lee, of course, an enemy of slavery and a man who refused to hold any slaves. And he wrote back to Acton and he said he believed that as a result of this war, we would eventually see the erection of a despotism in America and a despotic American empire overseas, and looks like he was right.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, Tom DeLorenzo has done everybody a favor by pointing out that the so-called Civil War was really an act of American empire, and very brutal one. And when it was over, they focused on the Plains Indians, the Western Indians. And I think they've gone on from there, you know, the Philippines, Cuba. We now have NATO. we are trying to put bases in the Caucasus. We have them in the Middle East. It's an amazing sort of thing. And all the while, there are millions of Americans who don't have any health care, who can't pay the enormous premiums that are driven up by all the government meddling. And we have jobs disappearing. The last 3 months, we've had 1.25 million jobs lost. All these people, what becomes of them? And of course, as you find people losing jobs like that, the mortgage defaults rise. The car payment loans are going to, you know, they're going to go into default. The credit card debt's going into default. We now see that many of these large shopping malls are beginning to default because stores are closing, and therefore the rents they were expecting to pay their own mortgages aren't materializing. We had this fantastic economic mess, and they still want wars. And, you know, it's still undetermined whether or not we're going to attack Iran. And so it shows a total disconnect of the government from all reality. And this makes you wonder, how do people get that way? How can they get so disconnected from reality?
Craig Roberts, thanks so much for coming on with us this morning. I want to urge everybody to take a look at Craig's archive on lewrockwell.com. And Craig, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Well, Lou, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, to an intelligent man who believes in liberty. And you do a great service. And your stance on liberty is courageous, and I'm pleased to be associated with you.
Thanks so much, Craig.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. Thanks for listening.